most people's internalized shame allows them to treat themselves in a way they would never treat another person. At least not with that they weren't incredibly pissed off at and, you know, temporarily only, like an acute situation, maybe. But this shame we all carry, but most of us tend to carry, we really can berate ourselves with it.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Trading Endgame, our newest mini-series with Sound Performance Psychology. Sound. Too many S's. I knew that was going to catch me one of these days. Sound Performance Psychology's Sean Sawyer, that's leveling up our emotional maturity. So far to date, we have covered fear and greed on our journey together. Links for those are in the show notes if you need to catch up. Tonight, however, is going to be a little bit different because tonight we are focusing on shame. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I have a feeling that most of my issues are rooted here than probably anywhere else. Before we get started on that, though, quick reminder to everybody that they can listen to these recordings live in Sean's free but private Discord. Just got to shoot one of us a DM. We'll get you in there. We just ask that if you do join, make sure you participate either by joining these live or by shooting us some questions to help stoke some of this discussion. Thanks to everybody who is listening in here live. Miss Hesitation almost joined the show, but she's back in the audience where she belongs. Save those questions, guys, until the end. We'll make sure that everything gets answered before we cut the cameras here. All right, and the last thing I will say that if you enjoyed today's conversation and you are shameful for more, no, that doesn't work. And you shamefully want more. How about that? That works. I highly encourage everyone to check out soundperformancepsychology.com, where you can find links to some free coaching web. I cannot speak today. There's links on there to sign up for a free consultation with you. Is that?
Yes.
So if you want to take a few minutes to talk to Sean specifically about an issue, he's got links on there on the website to do that. Sean, anything else you want to say before we dive in?
Nope, that's it. Let's roll.
Damn. All right. Man, I feel like we're getting a little bit tighter with these intros, huh? All right. So shame, man, where do you want to start with shame? I think kind of the way we've been kind of flowing with these is tell a little bit about like the background of what, how it's good. I think is that what we've been doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And something your intro made me think of, you know, referencing that you felt your issues might be rooted here. Shame is like the granddaddy of issues.
Oh,
you know, in terms of the language that I use, you know, I use the schema model, maladaptive schema model. You know, it's the granddaddy of those as well.
What does that mean? Does that just mean it's been around the longest?
It's very common, mm-hmm. And it's a double-edged sword because you like you can have shame based on, you know, being shamed, which is the more common one, but you can also have shame from other issues you have making you feel bad and beat up on yourself.
Yes.
So you build up your shame, you add to your shame because, you know, your abandonment issue manifested or your, you know, failure schema kicked up and you, you know, got a little cocky with the market or whatever, and then it doesn't work out. And then shame comes in and says, you're terrible. Not that was an ineffective decision for your trading career. It's you're a terrible human being or something along those.
Right.
Or, you know, you're an effing idiot or whatever.
Why do you keep doing this? Or
yes,
that's a voice that I hear. Stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So these typically have some sort of positive benefit. So
I mean, they do.
If I had to guess, I'd say evolutionary. This is just to keep us from going away from the herd because there's probably safety in numbers kind of thing.
You know, that's even a step deeper than I thought about it for that question. That is very likely a good behavioral reinforcer. I'll have to brush up on my evolutionary psychology for that. But it's also, you know, evolutionarily speaking, it does prevent us from doing terrible things to our fellow humans.
Right.
Because shame is a threat. You know, who hasn't had the thought of, I want to punch my boss in the face or something. Maybe that's not that common, but I've had it. And, you know, it would be a really shameful thing to do. There'd be a lot of fallout in my career. You know, so to avoid that, there's the upside of shame.
Mm-hmm.
The upside of believing shame or the way shame manifests as a kid is, and why it sticks is because, you know, let's just assume the shame comes from criticisms or undermining by parents. You know, there comes a point when instead of getting upset, a kid is just going to accept, air quotes, accept that they are, you know, a shithead or whatever it is they've been told. And it stops them from being upset. So in other words, your parent comes along and is nasty to you. Mm. And you're now just like, meh, yeah, I know I'm an idiot or I'm a blankety blank. Because if you just accept that as true, you no longer get distressed by it. You're just like, meh, I know. Versus like, oh my God, mom doesn't like me or dad doesn't like me or whatever. So
you ever seen the movie Bad Santa? The interaction with the kid in that movie.
Say that again. What is it?
The movie Bad Santa with Billy Bob Thornton and that.
You know, I have, but it's so long ago I couldn't.
There's an interaction with that kid where he says something like, I'm hoping you want to buy me a present, even though I'm a shithead loser. And like, it's,
yes.
What you're talking about there is almost like the perfect, like, example of that almost, you know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, you know, people reference themselves in a negative light all the time. You know, in our interactions, you and I working together behind the scenes, you've referenced, dude, you're a little hard on yourself.
Right.
Like, you know, it happens. And it's very, very baked in.
Well, I'm also a little sensitive to it from conversations with people like you. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how pervasive it is.
Mm, I know. Yeah. Though you don't even catch yourself sometimes with it. Sometimes it takes another person just saying like, hey, dude, it's okay.
Yeah. It's for how common it is, it's so shocking that it's not more widely addressed in trading psychology. And when I put an article out in, I was just checking it before we started, in September of last year, September of 24, about shame in trading.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I did it, I grabbed the trading psychology books I have. I grabbed what I could online and I looked in the indexes. You don't see shame.
No.
It's really surprising. I have since September seen a influencer type of person say something about it, but that's the only other time.
You're the first person I've heard bring it up as an emotion to be aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah. As Bruce said, he probably stole it from you too. Can you send me a link to that article? I do want to make sure I link that in the show
notes.
Yes. Anyway, sorry. I think we got a little derailed there.
It's okay. So where are we?
You're starting to see it more now popping up on Twitter.
Yeah, I've seen it some more. And I mean, I see it all the time with the people I work with, both individually and in workshops. I mean, it just stands to reason that it's going to be activated. Trading's really hard, especially the first few years as you're adjusting. You know, successful people, driven people, they have an expectation of certain outcomes, and when that doesn't happen, that shame monster can get revived if it's not present already.
The shame monster. It's maybe not a helpful way to identify it.
It is, because it is a monster. It's a real SOB. I mean, most people's internalized shame allows them to treat themselves in a way they would never treat another person, at least not with that they weren't incredibly pissed off at and temporarily only, like an acute situation maybe. But this shame we all carry, but most of us tend to carry, we really can berate ourselves with it and reinforce problematic behaviors, dismiss achievements and accomplishments as flukes. It's a interesting tool we can use to keep ourselves down.
So, that's very interesting. Like, I've been finding that voice, I think, has been, I don't know if it's just because I've been more public doing a podcast and putting more stuff out there, but I've been finding that voice has been getting a little bit louder, that self-critique one, that one that questions the stuff that you're putting out there, whether it's good or not, whether you're good at your job or not. I don't know. Is that just a function of like the path that we've chosen to walk that allows it to show up stronger, or is it just always there?
It goes along with comparisons. We've gotten into the evolutionary side of comparing. I think if we haven't,
I don't think we have.
Okay. It's, we've talked about the greed. We've talked about the worry. Mm-hmm. And the third really dominant characteristic that helped us get through the 200,000 years of, hunting and gathering, or however long it was, is comparing yourself to others. Mm-hmm. Because you alluded to it earlier, actually, without even knowing it. Good job. Hmm. You don't want to get kicked out of the tribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll die. I mean, it's only very, very, very recently and still debatable whether a human can survive completely alone. I get there's survivalists, yes, but that's different than surviving a lifetime. I've seen people attempt it. People can attempt it more. They can be very, very isolated, but they tend to need, the butcher and the milkman. It's like you can quote unquote be all alone, but you still need to rely on other people most likely.
We've been watching the Alaskan Bush people lately. Like, if you want to talk about people that are trying to do exactly that and like cut themselves out of society, that's that group of people. And even they need things like movies and stuff to get them through.
Yes.
Like, they need the entertainment. They need the outside world still.
Yeah. People forget that art and culture does drive evolution as well.
Right.
And it's, you can't just revert away from it, even if you're an Alaskan bush person or whatever.
Even they can't.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's about 12 seasons of it, so there's plenty to look at.
Oh my God, yeah. Okay.
we just started it, so actually watching that, so one of the things that causes me to feel like the most shame, or I don't know if it's shame or embarrassment, are those the same? Are they like rooted in the same? Okay.
Yeah, shame's kind of the umbrella. Embarrass is a verb to what shame is.
So, it makes me so uncomfortable that I have to get up and get out of the room when I watch somebody struggle, like trying to talk to women. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, really?
That's a thing that, like, I just can't watch somebody flounder at it. I can't watch Hugh Jackman try to be all cute on a rom-com. Like, I just, no, stop.
No kidding. Yeah. Interesting. Can you watch The Office?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I know people that can't watch The Office because of the awkwardness.
That's a different kind of awkwardness, though. It's not the...
Say more. That's what I'm trying to differentiate. Say more.
Actually, that's an awkwardness that I kind of like. I actually kind of like the uncomfortableness of like saying something that somebody else is looking at you like, when that doesn't land. Like, sometimes that's funny to me. Like, oh, that did not land. And sometimes that tastes good.
Yeah. Agreed. And The Office is incredibly relatable because every manager, boss, supervisor drags people into their crazy little reality and tries to make it important to their employees. But anyways, I think that's a good thing nuance to point out is like, embarrassment does fall under the shame. People don't like the word shame. I usually, when I introduce it, people are like, I'm not ashamed. Mm-hmm. But, they can say embarrassed, but, they don't quite realize it's the same thing.
Shame feels like a very strong word, and it's sometimes it doesn't.
It does, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's maybe culturally it's because of grandmas. Have you no shame?
Oh,
you know, yeah. I mean, a lot of people have been asked that question.
Right.
I know my grandmother, I remember that very distinctly, you know, that was her choice to try to motivate behavior.
Did it work?
Nope. Still did what I was going to do.
All right. Oh, geez.
Yep. Can always get away with it with grandma. I think that shame and fear need to, you know, deserve some differentiation because I see them commonly convoluted.
Yeah.
And fear is about danger. Shame is about identity. Fear is about a threat. Shame is about who I am.
Okay.
And, you know, fear can be adaptive. We've talked about that in the previous episodes. But for shame can corrode confidence and decision-making, which can therefore make you more shameful. Yeah. Can add to your shame, but they're not the same thing. Shame's more of a state.
So one of the things that we talked about, I think, with fear was we talked about the difference between, I think, like acute versus chronic.
Yes.
Is there something similar with shame? Are there different versions of shame?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, you could. So, you know how I mentioned that embarrassment, you could call it like a verb for shame. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an action. It's some people would say that's the feeling and shame's the emotion. You could argue that being embarrassed is a short-term manifestation of shame.
You mean like the flush, like when it really like hits you, like when your
Correct.
Cheeks go red.
Red face, yeah. Warm. You know, you want to sink down your chair. Your shoulders flop. You look down at the ground.
Yeah.
You know, it's very powerful. It has. You look at those are all physical symptoms. It's so clear when someone's ashamed or someone's embarrassed. So, is there a short term for shame itself? No, I wouldn't say so.
Okay.
It's much more of a characteristic. It goes beyond a temporary state into a static trait.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say.
So I made a list of some of the things that caused me to feel shame. I don't know if you had a chance to kind of look through that. I sent that to you before we started. I can read off a couple of them if you like, and maybe we can kind of try to analyze some of that maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, go for it.
So these are some of the ones that just like really stuck out to me. So like I feel shame when I get something wrong, like especially like publicly, like if I say something and it's wrong. If I'm being judged, or if I feel like I'm being judged, even I felt like I had to differentiate there. Sometimes that's
a very important distinction,
right? Sometimes you think everybody's looking at you and criticizing you, but they're probably not. But yeah, if I get that feeling like. Especially if I think they're doing it with incomplete information, like, oh, they're judging me, but I'm having to, like, this is going on. These are the extenuating circumstances. This is why I ran the red light, or this is why I cut you off in traffic. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. It won't happen again, but I can't explain it to you. And now you're driving off thinking I'm a piece of shit, you know?
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
No, I'm okay. I don't know if you were.
Oh, well, I mean, I guess the rest of it kind of goes through with that, but like, so it's kind of like. Along that thread, like when I'm the cause of someone's emotional distress, I feel like that's when I'm feeling shame, like peak shame.
So remember, that would in part be some of the functional side of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's to help us treat each other better. And, you know, the intensity that you're describing, you know, speaks to there's some beliefs that are held. Who knows where they come from? We could figure that out if we wanted to. But there's some beliefs held that get activated of, you know, you're a blankety blank, you know, you're not this, you're not that. You know, public, obviously, like public speaking is one of the most common fears that people talk about. That's a shame-based thing.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly common. The question becomes, you know, if you feel it in these other contexts, like you're describing, when do you feel it trading? Do you feel it trading? Because yes. It doesn't necessarily mean you will. Like someone with social anxiety, they're generally loaded with shame. But it doesn't mean someone with social anxiety can't be a good trader. Mm-hmm. They may need to work on the shame a little bit, but or a lot, but it does not necessarily go from one to the other.
So if you want to talk about specifically manifesting and trading, then that's going to be Like when I say I'm going to do something today, today I'm only going to take these trades, or today I'm going to do this. And when I don't do that, like that's peak shame too. Like I've made it a point that I'm going to not take this or not get sucked into this emotion. And then when I go ahead and do it anyway, that's when I want to beat myself up the hardest. And like not having done some of the stuff that we've talked about before, like with the values based work that, we talk
about. How dare you? You're not meditating every day.
No, I'm not, man. I try.
Cannot believe it. But you're fired.
Like I've done some of the work, but I mean, I feel like that's probably going to be the best place to maybe get past some of this stuff is to maybe identify. But maybe that's where that shame comes from, is recognize that I haven't done the work that I know will actually help me be successful in sticking to that plan.
Yeah, it gets layered, as you can tell just from the past like 30 seconds. You get the shame, and there's the meta shame. The shame of the shame comes in, and it's like the shame of the shame of the shame. And then it's like, oh my God, I've shared too much. Maybe you start to feel flushed and embarrassed now, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the real trick of it. And it's one of those situations where fear is way better to experience. Like just connecting it to trading again, like, you know, you say you have a bad trade doesn't work out. Fear can say, all right, I need to regroup before I re-enter. Or fear might say, all right, I gotta take a little break here before I re-enter. Shame would say, I'm a freaking idiot, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, right.
And that's much more harmful,
right?
You know, fear, again, fear can be useful. Like, yes, fear takes its toll because chronic threat can be an issue, but it's a lot better, functionally speaking, trading wise and all that, to use that fear to your advantage, leverage it for you, like we discussed in that other episode. And instead of, you know, shitting all over your own identity,
right,
I'm a bad person because I'm not good enough, because I'm a bad, you know, person, I'm a bad husband, wife, like whatever. We have to be very mindful of that, because our brain can bullshit us in very special ways. And that's a really subtle, pervasive, you know, way. And one of the reasons I use EMDR is because shame is so rigid, and traders tend to be pretty rigid, that you need something that cuts through the cognitive dissonance. Because you can explain to someone or give people examples of why they shouldn't be ashamed, or, you know, why the shame isn't effective, or, you know, where the shame comes from in the past, but it needs to be processed, because it does leave a mark. It is a small T trauma most of the time when we get shamed when we're young. I mean, just today I did EMDR on an incident of being bullied in a high school cafeteria, junior high cafeteria. I mean, this thing has been sticking with this guy for a long time. I think he's 20 years out of school or that age. And, you know, it doesn't take its effect. It doesn't mean that it's not affecting relationships and how you perceive yourself, and to shed that, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to be, you know, some like perfectly, what's it called? Enlightened or self-actualized, as Maslow says.
I mean, one of the things you said in there is about how fear, like it almost sounds like fear is more constructive than shame is. Shame is is shame constructive at all? Like, is there any benefit to when it pops up and starts shitting on my self-worth?
It does, because it's the moral thing. It's the values thing. It's the, I'm going to be ashamed if I hurt somebody, if I abuse somebody, if I mistreat somebody, if I steal, if I whatever. Like, it can ameliorate certain behaviors that should be.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't, it's nowhere near as functional as fear. No, because, you know, we need fear, we need anxiety and fear, you know, every day to not die.
Right.
We don't have to call on shame every day to not hurt someone else. So, but we do use fear every day in a functional way.
So are there any like grounding exercises, any mindfulness exercises or things that you can recommend? Like if you find yourself, I guess, recognizing yourself in the grips of shame and it's just whispering shitty things in your ears. Like, how do you?
Yeah, recognize and label it. You know, when you got to paint the picture. So your brain is bullshitting you with some shame. You got
to
use.
How do we add to that?
Yeah. So you have to, what you add is the label
mm-hmm.
for one. is, all right, I am noticing shame right now. I'm noticing my mind is shaming me. I'm noticing my thoughts are shaming me. And that sets us up for, you know, diffusion, as we've talked about a lot. But that label is a huge deal. You know, the difference between I'm a failure and I'm having the thought that I'm a failure is very significant. And when we can get into the habit of that, I'm a failure, it won't crush you. Like, I'm noticing the thought that I'm a failure. It might not make you feel like sunshine and roses, but it's not going to crush you in that same way. So, you know, that's a piece of it. You know, if you can identify what does shame you, that's good. You can avoid that to some degree, but, you know, that's also
problematic. Is that the answer, though? Because avoiding? Yeah.
No.
So, like, we use the example of, like, public speaking. Like, somebody's afraid of public speaking, then a lot of times they'll tell people, like, go to a Toastmasters club and then, like, start actually doing it so you get over your fear. Like, is that's the opposite of avoiding it. That's confronting it.
Right. It doesn't mean you shouldn't avoid your shitty uncle who shames you all the time.
Oh.
Or, you know, in extremes, a parent or, of, you know, look around your friend, your social circle. There's probably someone who's kind of a prick. Doesn't treat you that great, that you put up with some shit, and that doesn't help anything. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers the question.
Sounds like some of that shame stuff is buried in, or at least, I remember you talked about, like, what was the thing that caused you to argue a lot? Because it allows you to, like, figure out who you are when you're...
An underdeveloped sense of self.
That. Like, I feel like that might have a little bit of play, or at least in, like, the issues that I have with shame. Like, feels like that might be tied into it as well.
That's a good example of how our other issues can every single one of our other issues can add to shame.
Right.
Because we can be ashamed that we're anxious. We can be ashamed we're depressed. We can be ashamed we're not passing evaluations. We can be ashamed we've had a flat year. We can be ashamed we've had a red year. There's so many things you can be ashamed of.
Keep going. No, I'm just kidding. let's see then. Okay, so we've gone through some of the examples. It does help us. We did figure that out in some ways. I think we've talked about some ways to recognize it, some things that you can do if you find yourself being overwhelmed by it. Is there anything else with shame that we maybe should touch on before we move into some questions?
Yes. Practice self-compassion. Most traders are going to roll their eyes, and they roll their eyes right in my face sometimes when I say that to them, but I don't care. Practice self-compassion. You got it. You have to learn how to treat yourself. To me, it's a form of self-respect, so you could look at it that way if you need to. But that's a big part of ameliorating shame.
Can you
serving your values, your purpose, your function can help ameliorate shame, can help get rid of shame. What's going on?
Oh, I was just going to ask about self-compassion. If you can give us kind of an example of, like, what that looks like.
Of what a self-compassion, like, exercise looks like,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, like, how do you practice that? Like, I just, when I have those thoughts, then I just recognize that, I don't know, how does that work?
So, give me an example of a harsh internal dialogue related to trading you might have.
Related to trading, don't want to take this loss because I don't want to tell my accountability buddy that I lost.
You don't want to tell your accountability buddy you lost. Okay.
Yeah. All right. I feel shameful about this loss because now I have to go tell him.
So an example of self-compassion would be to defuse from those thoughts with things like, that makes sense that I'm embarrassed about this. It's behavior that, you know, I'm not proud of, and, you know, people mess up in trading. This is understandable. This person, you know, it might help that depending on the relationship you have with that person, you know, this person, you know, respects me, like those kinds of reminders. But it's a lot of internal work, and even things like visualizations, like, you know, you got to treat yourself like you would treat your best friend. Most of the stuff does come from a young age. And, if a 10-year-old walked up to you and said, I'm a loser.
Right.
You're not going to be like, yeah, you are.
Unless you're Billy Bob Thornton. Ready to nerd out on the tech shaping tomorrow? Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025, is back for season two. We're featuring pioneers rocking Web3, AI, and blockchain innovation. So get the scoop on the people powering the next wave of innovation by subscribing now wherever you get your podcasts. And join us for the fun in September at bostonblockchainweek.com for the killer talks, epic vibes, and top-tier networking. And if you happen to run into me or my wife, come see us because we'll probably have unused drink tickets. Eric, why should people listen to season two?
I'm really excited for season two because what's interesting is that we talked about the founding of America. You know, we set that foundation. And now we're going to watch America try and build a house that will become divided and burned down.
we're going to watch them fail spectacularly.
Yeah, we're going to watch them fail spectacularly. It's going to end with the nation ripping itself apart, the founding of the best Virginia, and, you know, the suspending of habeas corpus. about as blas and getting. But what's going to be cool is what emerges from season two is the foundation for the world's largest, most advanced economy.
You visit the website, buckstartsherepodcast.com, to stay up to date. We'll see you all next week. Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com, and that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
But yes.
And the
yes.
reason you're not going to do that is one, shame.
Yes.
But you're going to have compassion for a kid. You know, we lose that somewhere along the lines. We lose, I think it's because of all the shaming. We lose this ability to be compassionate with ourselves. And we kind of forget how to do it. But yeah, a great rule of thumb is treat yourself like your best friend. And that's the practice. You know, you catch yourself talking shit to yourself, being harsh on yourself, whatever. Okay. So the practice would be, you know, jotting that stuff down. Emotional stuff should be part of your journaling. What themes are you noticing? What is your mind telling you? What's the harshness? What's the critical? What's the positive? Yada, yada. And, you know, when you keep records of that, you're going to see patterns. So then you might need to write down maybe the most common thing that is repeated on your mental record, your mental tape you're playing through over and over again. So that you can develop that mindful awareness of, oh, here it goes again. I'm telling myself I'm a freaking loser. And it's not about here's 10 different ways I'm not a loser. It's about what would I say to my boy Mike about that?
Right.
You know,
right.
If he came to me and said that, what would I say to my son? What would I say to my daughter, niece, nephew, whatever? They're going to be different answers and they need to be more similar.
You need to, you know, almost like just recognize the little you, right? Like if I could start visualizing the me that I'm talking negative to is maybe a little 5-year-old who just wants to play with his Legos, maybe I'll be a little less harsh.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that think that that's being too soft or a wuss or whatever, but, you know, plants don't grow when you don't water them and treat them like shit, and kids don't grow well when you do that stuff. So why are you doing it to yourself now as an adult, as a trader? You want to work and succeed in one of the hardest professions on the planet. Why the fuck are you doing that to yourself? And why the fuck would you really rise at this kind of work? if that's what you're trying to achieve. It is the fine tuning. It is the deep stuff that makes a difference. It is the person who's willing to work on this than, you know, the next, you know, whatever, ACT, whatever they're called, you know, the next thing, the next indicator or whatever. Like that's what makes the difference.
So two notes that I made then here then is that really awareness and acceptance, I think, is really what it comes down to. Like being just aware of it and accepting that's happening, I think, is really just the easiest way for me to describe it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great description. I mean, acceptance is the biggest. It always comes back to that for me. Like when people can have that process down, they do so much better because they can accept losses. They can accept when the trade is over. They can accept they're not, you know, the greatest trader on earth if they have a big trade. They're a lot more flexible psychologically. And also, you know, there's things like, you know, choose your company. I've been around a lot of negative stuff in trading rooms. I've been a part of a lot of negative stuff in trading rooms. Like it isn't the great, you know, think about that and ask yourself why you're around it. I think you mentioned grounding. That's a good one too. A couple of old school ways to work on this, old school psychology, you know, would be setting small achievable goals, and when you achieve them, acknowledge them. They call that building a sense of mastery, and there's a lot of good data for that being effective.
Is that why my wife loves lists?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's very likely that's why your wife loves lists. I mean, she loves crossing things off of lists.
Yes, she does. Right?
She likes the list being done, and she likes you doing what you got to do to shut off or cross off the things on that list. I am sure as well. Hi, Laura. And you know, that's a good example.
All right. Let's see if anybody else in the chat here has any questions. Go ahead and just drop them in there. Let's see. I got one from Moto Mans here, our friend over in Poland. He's got a two-parter here on here. So first part was about gaming shame. He says he trades better when he posts his prep or review, knowing that he needs to own his fills. And are there downsides to this approach? And I'll let you answer that before I go to the next one.
When he says game, I'm not sure what he's meaning. He's like...
It's like he's gaming shame. It's like he's tricking it into his benefit. He's using shame to make him do trade better.
Yeah, okay. That's... I would say that is probably less than ideal, but it's very personality specific.
Okay.
What he has to be honest about is if that works. And contextually speaking, it's not going to work outside of trading.
Mm-hmm.
It just won't. So that's my... kind of skepticism of that. It could work just in trading. He could, you know, quote unquote, game his relationship with shame, you know, during market hours. That is possible. It doesn't mean he's going to be shame free the rest of his life. That is possible. It is not what I would necessarily recommend, but it does sound like he's using some kind of, I serve my values. If I don't do X, therefore I'll get around shame. So, you know, that's really possible. It's too bad he's not here right now. I could ask him a couple of questions to clarify.
He's in Poland.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're, you know, when you hear this, again, not necessarily right or wrong, you know, listen to this and drop some questions in the chat and I'll clarify, because it's a very interesting behavior.
I have used that approach, or at least kind of leaned into that idea. Like when people are watching, I trade better. That's kind of the feeling. But what I have noticed is that when you do have a really bad day, is that the want to run away from it becomes much stronger than it does normally. Because it's just, man, sometimes it gets really hard to share those really shitty days, you know?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, just be careful that you don't fall into the trap, I would say, of avoiding it, the really bad ones.
You just take the words right out of my mouth. I mean, avoidance is the thing you got to be careful of reinforcing. We all like to avoid feeling shame. You know, one of the mechanisms to overcome shame is, you know, dealing with overcompensation. You know, overcompensation in trading might be a revenge trade. Overcompensation you know, in life might be like, oh, I've got a nicer car than you, or a, you know, a fancy watch, or that kind of nonsense you see out there here and there. That then it's just vanity, so who cares? Right. But that's one way people manage it. And you just want to be mindful of that. What was right. There's a second part.
Yeah. So the part two is the shame of losing money is part of childhood. I'd like to know if there's ways of reprocessing relationships to losing money other than via values. Maybe part one of the question.
EMDR, buddy.
EMDR. Yeah. I had a feeling.
EMDR. Well, he uses the word reprocessing.
Right. Yeah.
you know, so, you know, and I'm biased. Obviously I'm a therapist. I like those models. But I say EMDR because it's not something you're going to have to pour over it and do inner child work or something if you want to, or we can, you know, just reprocess the memory with EMDR, get it stored where it's supposed to be stored in the brain. It won't really bother you that much anymore. So that would be my answer to that. I think on your own, you know, it could be meditating on that. It could be, there's something called, you know, imaginal reparenting. I mean, you can imagine yourself in that situation, thinking back, and then, you know, think about what you would have needed, what you would have wanted, and kind of imagine your adult self giving that to you, or some safe adult figure, you know, providing that for you. There are things like that, but, you know, the relationship with money being a problem starting young, it's usually related to poverty, right? It's pretty serious. I mean, because a lack of money at a young age is a threat at a young age. I mean, like one of my closest friends now, I mean, like, you know, he had mornings where he put water on his cereal, you know, like right. That's a big threat. He's gone hungry. And so things like trading, things like their relationship with money, they can be very tied in with very difficult issues. If it's one of those things where it's like you grew up wealthy and it was like money was a faux pas to talk about, well, then we're coming back to shame. And it's in your bag. It's, you know, tied to your shame. So yes, those are really significant. You know, doing it on your own, you know, you could say meditation, you could say yoga, you could say those techniques I tried, but I think it's a pretty tough one to work on your own. Not impossible, but I, off the top of my head, I have to think about some more mechanisms to work on that. I'd also be curious for him, for follow-up, if you're listening in the chat, you know, add in what you're aware of that you feel during that. And what are you aware of emotionally? Are there themes, things like that?
Good stuff. All right. Let's see if we got anything else posted in here. Ooh, here's a good one. What is the difference between shame and guilt?
Shame and guilt? Not.
Yeah. Yeah. Guilt this time.
Okay. They are incredibly similar. And again, guilt is more the transitory state that will add to shame, but they are two sides of the same coin. Like I use those words pretty interchangeably in therapy. And frankly, I kind of use the one that the person's more comfortable with because they won't be internally or literally fighting me on it. But
okay. I see.
You know what I'm saying? Like people, one of those words they don't like, or they feel like they're being a wuss if they're guilty or something like that.
Well, guilt would probably be, I'd have a harder time. I think I would prefer shame over guilt because guilt to me sounds like negative, like criminal almost, right? I would associate it like that. So that kind of like that idea.
It's more interpersonal, right? Mm-hmm. Like hang on. I got to think about this. It's such a hair splitting question.
I mean, I always think of guilt as being something you did too, not, whereas shame can be something that you didn't do.
It's definitely an emotion.
Like can you feel guilty for something you didn't do? I guess you could. Oh, I should have done that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Isn't much of a difference between the two.
Very, very similar. As something we discussed, your point about behavior and guilt, there's more of a behavioral, like, I did this or didn't do that. Not doing something is a behavior, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a behavioral choice, so it's a behavior. Okay. So, you know, it's whatever, I stole something, or I lied to somebody, or, you know, I hurt their feelings or whatever. Like it's that. But the reason they're so overlapped and so hard to differentiate is because it just dumps onto your shame.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing we talked about earlier regarding shame, which is a good differentiation as well as identity. Like shame is like shame becomes part of your identity. Like I'm a bad person versus right, okay. I did a bad thing.
Yeah.
And guilt can be used to motivate good behavior. Like if I was talking to someone about how to talk to a kid who's misbehaving, I would advise them that they, you know, instead of like, you know, you're Billy, you're a bad boy, it'd be like, Billy, you did something bad. You hear the difference?
Yeah.
It's helping that kid externalize. They don't even know it, but you did a bad thing, Billy. You know, you did a bad thing. I love you anyways, but you're going to go to the corner for that. You know, it's versus Billy, what is wrong with you? What's the matter with you? Why did you do that?
Those are the voices you hear in your head when you're experiencing those.
Well, yeah. I'm talking, because they're internalized from our parents or grandparents or you know, freaking neighbor, whoever, teachers.
Right.
I had a lot, you know, I had some teachers that were real pricks that, you know, they could get away with more in the 90s than they can now. We didn't have parents calling in for us and whatnot.
I know, but, right?
yeah, those things are big important. So, you know, you're to your point, you could argue that guilt can be used constructively versus, you know, shame is generally not the most constructive thing. And in fact, the thing we're talking about earlier, the functional side, we may have been talking more about guilt specifically.
Oh, okay. So the last thing I got here then is just, I mean, we talked a little bit about maybe some of the pitfalls, I guess, of trying to do it on your own. So I do like to play around with the AI before we do these things. And I was getting some information or some recommendations from this thing that I feel like I need to bring it up here because this is the kind of stuff that I think you get really upset about. So here's what it said. There's some important questions. This is the Google AI.
Okay.
How can I be more shame resilient? Building self-compassion, challenging negative self-talk, and fostering a sense of belonging are key components of shame resilience. I'm pretty sure we've talked a lot about challenging negative self-talk as being a bad idea.
Yeah, it doesn't work very well. It makes things worse.
And it actually goes on to talk a little bit more about that. Questions like, is this thought true? Or how would I feel if I didn't have this thought can be helpful in challenging shame, according to Tana Amen.
Yeah. So what exactly is your question about that? Because I've got a couple, I've got many, many, many
there's
thoughts
not a,
about this.
It's not a question. I think it's more like a PSA. Like if you're going to be using AI to try to go look up for ideas to try to help you deal with some of this stuff, like you got to be really, really careful of what's out there.
Yeah, someone posted a video in the Discord about that, and it just tends to get malevolent, apparently.
Yeah.
People are doing this quite a bit. But the thing you're going to get from AI as a therapist, and if you're trying to do that, you know, whatever, I wouldn't recommend it, but I also wouldn't say not to do it. What I would say is it's not therapy. Therapy is a process. What you're getting is psychoeducation.
Ah, that's a better word.
You're getting, yeah. I can explain things to somebody, but if you're paying me, you know, to work with you one-on-one, you don't want to sit and have me explain it. I'm going to engage you in the process and make you feel the shit.
Right.
And, you know, create corrective experiences. Use EMDR. Use the relationship. And it's not... When I say use, it's not in any kind of like manipulative way. It's like, that's the stuff that heals is connecting, is creating safety, is creating new experiences, expressing things like that. And, you know, the AI that's going to give you some answers and maybe some ways to pursue, but the thing that's going to change you is if you pursue it or not. It's not like, aha, now I have this piece of information. Otherwise, everyone could just be educated in psychology and everyone's mental health would be great.
You don't just get to stop as soon as you get the information? I thought that was all you had to do.
Exactly.
Oh, shit.
Exactly. It's always funny working with like interns and stuff. They always come up with these crazy expectations for stuff like that. It's just like,
could you just give me the answer?
That does not work that way.
There is no answer.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I think that we made a pretty good episode here then. You have anything else you want to say before we wrap this thing up then? Get everybody off to bed?
Don't sleep on shame.
God, no.
Take an honest assessment of how much shame-based thinking is going on. We'll link the article I wrote. It will help you people identify it. There's a long list of stuff to do. But don't let overcompensation, ego, whatever, think you don't have an issue with shame, because it's very, very common and it's going to affect our trading. So embrace it, roll with it, and train better.
Love it, man.
Because of it.
Secret time here before I wrap up. You mentioned public speaking. Laura actually is asking me about, because we're talking about doing this train the trainer thing and potentially like doing some events for like the local public library.
Oh.
As soon as she mentioned that, I was like, the idea of like speaking live in front of a group, I felt that knot in the stomach of like, oh shit, I don't know if I want to do that. She's like, you get on a microphone every day. Like, why is this a problem?
That's different.
Like, it's different.
It is different.
Yeah.
But I can give you some ideas for stuff. Oh shit, that's what I should have said. I guess too, because visualization is a good one.
You kind of mentioned that a little bit.
You know, you can visualize a situation that you're ashamed of and really immerse yourself in the visualization. Because then when you get to the situation, your brain does kind of act as if you've been there before. That doesn't mean it's going to be super comfortable or easy or no problem, but we can, it's not really tricking our brain, but you know, our brains are pretty amazing.
I've been really good at doing the visualization thing. That's something that I just done naturally, I think. And it does help, but only because it just makes you feel like you've done it before. It doesn't feel like it's new. It's not scary when it's not new.
You know? Yeah. You know, I'm pretty bad with public speaking. I had my last job. I had to do it a lot and it was much better. When it was really bad, when I was younger in grad school, I did visualization techniques. I'd sit outside in the parking lot before I went into the presentation. So this is like grad school stuff. There was a lot of pressure. I was young. I was worried about it. I'd visualize the classroom. I'd visualize where most people were sitting in the classroom and visualize my view from as if I was staying in front of the class and just like go through the paper, because I usually was like reading a paper or whatever. And as I'm imagining looking at these people, and that helped desensitize, it went from like being like beet red and sweaty to just uncomfortable, but not like painfully uncomfortable.
Right.
And then now people don't necessarily even know when I am really uncomfortable because I do that kind of stuff to manage it.
Funny thing about those classroom ones is that you know that nobody else is paying any attention to you floundering up there because they're all just worried about their turn that's coming up next.
Exactly. That thought. I definitely would sit in that class when other people were presenting and make an effort to look at other people and what they were doing. And most of them were not engaged.
Yeah.
And that was really helpful too. So for what it's worth.
Right.
Or just, you know, get some Xanax.
Well, if you're listening to this program, that's probably not
legally by prescription by a medical professional, not off the corner.
All right. Well, please join me in thanking our host, Sean Sawyer, tonight. Remember to visit soundperformancepsychology.com on your way out. Tell Sean you're ready to level up your trading game. Take advantage of those free consultations. There's also more than likely going to be another workshop coming around the corner, so keep an eye out for those. When there is a new one, I will be sure to link that for everybody. We'll be back soon with more emotions to scrutinize, but until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a great week.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.